Welcome back to part two of my June 28th interview with Bob Moriarty of 321 Gold. Bob was interviewed for the June 28th episode of my show that was titled, How Are Those Sanctions Working Out, Mr. Biden? Bob is back now for part two of our June 28th interview because we simply ran out of time and Bob had so many more very important things to share with our listeners. So, Bob, thank you so much for joining me and taking the time to share your insights with our listeners. It's great to have you.
Certainly. Anytime, Jay.
You know, it's really a pleasure learning to know you, your insights. You are a unique human being. You're the kind of animal that can exist in a free society. Thank God for that. And because if we're free, the individual talents come forth. But if you're suppressed in a totalitarian regime, that's why totalitarian regimes don't do very well. They just don't. They're not prosperous. So anyway, yesterday we talked about the insanity of America's war in the Ukraine and who the real powers are that control American policies. Now, they are most certainly not the voters of America, but rather there are several powers behind the throne that you spoke about. Maybe to pick up from where we left off yesterday, could you review those folks or those institutions that are responsible for what's going on?
Okay, well, what we have going on now, and it's not obvious to most people, is a conflict literally between good and evil. And there is a group, a small group, but very powerful group, primarily headed by the World Economic Forum, who literally want to turn the world into slavery to work for them. And you've got Soros and you've got Bill Gates and you've got Zuckerberg. You've got the military industrial complex in the United States. And what has happened is their objectives are the same. They want to take control. And this has happened multiple times through history. Every history book is filled with stories of how stupid the rich and powerful are. You don't read stories about countries where everything's wonderful and everybody's prosperous and everybody's happy and they're not at war. Mm-hmm. You read about the incredible stupidity. Okay, now you can go back to climate change, Antifa, BLM, the riots, the fake election in 2020, the January 6th circus that's going on today, COVID, the Ukraine war, the next pandemic that Biden has already blown the whistle on, and they're all connected. The same people are behind this, and they're trying to keep the world in fear, so they're feeding them a constant diet of fear porn. Now, the good news is, even though they're very rich and very powerful, they always screw it up. Now, if you read The Great Reset, and you go to YouTube and you listen to Klaus Schwab, he admits it. It is not a conspiracy. It's being done right in front of us. And literally, Putin and China are on one side and the World Economic Forum are on the other side. And the danger is that the World Economic Forum is losing and they see a nuclear war, World War III, has been a very good thing. There are things going on in Ukraine that absolutely stagger me, and nobody's asked the right question. Now, let me ask you a question, Jay. Mm-hmm. You know I do this to you. How much should Americans care who runs Ukraine?
Well, I don't think it should be much of a concern at all. That's a good question. I mean, I think Donald Trump asked that question. Why should we be involved in all these different countries? Let's take care of America. Let's make America great again. I would say let's make sure our own borders are secure, which our current administration doesn't seem to care two hoots about, but they seem to be very concerned about that border. So I would say I don't think that we should be that concerned. I mean, why? We have suffering and all kinds of problems here at home. Let's take care of those first. That's my attitude.
Well, strange enough, that leads me into another thing that I want to talk about, but you're absolutely correct. Now, there is a very famous YouTube video put out by Victoria Nuland, and I can't remember how long ago it was 5 years ago or 6 years ago, where she bragged about the United States having spent $5 billion to subvert democracy in Ukraine. And when I watched that, I thought, we spent $5 billion on Ukraine? That's insane. Mm-hmm. I mean, Ukraine's this tiny country. It's corrupt. It's run by Nazis. It should be the richest country in Europe because of its natural resources. Mm-hmm. And it's the poorest country in Europe because it's totally corrupt. Strange enough, then I realized now we've spent another $40 or $50 mm-hmm. billion dollars that has to be produced by the American taxpayers to support an illegal regime that the United States put in power in a coup d'etat in 2014.
Right.
Those unimaginable numbers. Now, at the same time, we don't care about our borders. I mean, it's crystal clear. I think the number is 1.2 million, 1.1 million illegal immigrants crossing the border mm-hmm. every year. Mm-hmm. Now, that's staggering. Now, if you go to grocery stores, there's empty aisles. If you need baby formula, you can't buy it. If you need women's products, you can't buy them. We were going to talk about diesel fuel, mm-hmm. which is in shortage, mm-hmm. and what's called AdBlue, which is an additive that all diesel engines need now, and diesel oil that mm-hmm. requires a special additive only made by two different companies. If you got a late model diesel car or truckers, mm-hmm. diesel fuel's in shortage, diesel oil is in shortage, and AdBlue is in shortage. This is insane. We're the richest country in the world. How the hell can you donate $50 billion to a shithole like Ukraine, and you can't supply tampons to women or baby food? That's insanity. So that's where we are now, and the question is, how bad does it have to get? And strange enough, and Americans are not asking the right questions, China and Russia supply both finished products in the case of China and the inputs in the case of Russia. The world cannot survive without Russia and China. Now, why would we want to create enemies out of them when we need to get along with them? And quite bluntly, when I was in Vietnam, I was there from July of 1968 to March of 1970, and somebody would come up and start talking about how wonderful the war was. And I said, well, okay, do me a favor. Define victory. How are we going to know when we've won? And, of course, they get that near headlight look and mm-hmm. go, because you couldn't define victory. Mm-hmm. If you cannot define victory in a conflict, you cannot accomplish victory. Mm-hmm. How is the United States any better by destroying Russia? And the answer is they're not any better. They're far worse off. Inflation will get worse. Hyperinflation is certainly in the cards. Americans are paying the price now. And the insanity is the Russians aren't paying the price. The Russian ruble went, when the sanctions were announced, the ruble shot up to 160 to the dollar. And as a result of the sanctions and the high price they're getting for wheat and corn and oil, the ruble's now 52 to mm-hmm. the dollar. It's mm-hmm. been the strongest currency in the world for the last 5 years. Now, the definition of insanity is to do the same thing again and again and again and expect different results. Now, we were not better off by attacking Iraq. We were not better off by attacking Sudan. We were not better off by attacking Somalia. We were not better off by attacking Afghanistan. We were not better off by attacking Iran. Those the military industrial complex, they succeeded.
Yes.
But it's destroyed the United States. The United States is functionally bankrupt. We cannot pay our bills, and we need to do something about it. When you can't get baby food, and when you can't buy diesel fuel, and when you can't buy feminine products, you got a real problem, and you need to address that.
Right. Well, I think a lot of that goes back a long time ago, Bob, when we offshored so many things. And I would suggest that some of the people you're ascribing current policy to have been in charge and have been directing things, you know, away from American production for a long time, for several decades. And that really happened after Nixon took us off the gold standard. But one thing I wanted to ask you about with regard to, you know, you're going to have a lot of people when they hear this story, and I have it all the time because, you know, people I'm telling some of the same things you're saying to people, and they say, well, it's crazy, Taylor. You're just a conspiracy nut. And I would say your answer to that probably would be one thing would be to direct them to read The Great Reset by Klaus Schwab, right? He's saying right there what they're planning to do, what they want to do. I mean, it's not a mystery. It's not a secret. They're letting you know.
The strange thing is, and that's why I say it is not a conspiracy. He's written the books. There have been dozens of comments on YouTube. His chief technical advisor, whose name I could not possibly pronounce, makes no bones about it. He talks about useless eaters. He talks about a central bank digital currency. He talks about total surveillance. He talks about how you will no longer own a home. You will rent the home, and the home will be much cheaper because while you're at work, they're going to use your living room as a business meeting place. I mean, I'm sitting here saying, are these people insane? And of course, the answer is yes. They are insane. They're serious about this. The Davos crowd absolutely intends to reduce population. Bill Gates makes no bones about it. You can go to YouTube and you can watch the YouTube video of Bill Gates, and he says vaccines will reduce population. Now, think about that for a minute, Jay. Mm. If vaccines reduce population, wait a minute. Maybe I don't want to be reduced. Maybe I'm carbon they want to get rid of. And they are proceeding on a path. There's been total chaos in the last 2 years around the world because of the entire COVID stupidity. And we're now looking back on it and saying, gee, you know, they got everything wrong. Hmm. And they're doing the same thing with Ukraine. This, what should be an absolutely meaningless affair, is literally a day or a week or a month away from World War III. Now, I've been in a war. I'm going to tell you guys, they're no fun.
No. No. Bob, let me just ask you that quote from Gates. Is there some place where we can read that or find it?
You can do a YouTube search for it.
Okay.
You do a YouTube search on Bill Gates commenting on vaccines reducing population.
Yeah.
But these guys make no bones about it. If you can find the name of Klaus Schwab's technical advisor and listen to him, you are listening to someone who is really scary. The head of the UN has said that they should use COVID as a means to advance the 2030 agenda.
Yeah.
And when you look at the 2030 agenda, you will own nothing, you will owe nothing, and you will be happy. And folks, that is the definition of a slave.
Yeah, and you explained in part one of our discussion why slaves are happy, because they have to be happy or else.
And no, they don't have to be happy.
The master tells them they have
to be happy. They're unhappy.
They're what, Bob?
Slaves are not happy.
Of course they're not.
You don't want to be a slave, but if your master asks you, are you happy?
Right.
What do you tell him?
I'm happy. I'm happy.
Yeah, Master. Absolutely, yeah. Master. I couldn't be happier. This is absolutely wonderful. Because you get beat if you don't. And that's exactly where we're going. These people are insane.
But
they
Bob,
have bankrupted the world.
Arrogant, insane, filthy rich. But I would say that part of what you're saying with the slavery is what we've been experiencing with the cancel culture and being not allowed to talk, you know, to express our ideas. We've been told to shut up and just obey. And I've sort of, you know, sort of feel that the masks that everybody's wearing, it's sort of an obedience symbolism. I am obedient to you, Master. I will wear this mask wherever I go. And
okay, you just brought up something very interesting. And in my books, I try to get people to learn to think for themselves.
Right.
If you will ask the right question, you will get the right answer. Now, Jay, first of all, if you ask the wrong question, what do you get?
The wrong answer.
You always get the wrong answer,
mm-hmm.
but if you ask the right question, you'll come up with the correct answer. Now, the interesting thing about masks, and you do not have to be a scientist, the next time you see somebody driving along in a car all by themselves and they're wearing a mask, the question you need to ask is that person afraid of giving COVID to themselves, or are they afraid of catching COVID from themselves?
Mm-hmm.
But the issue of masks is so simple, and a moron could figure it out if he asked the right question. If you were a virus and you could fit 400 of your brothers and sisters through one of the holes in a mask, would masks prevent COVID?
Right. No, it's, and people were asking the right questions, Bob, but they weren't allowed to be, the right answers weren't allowed to be aired on the mainstream media. We know that. But let's get to a couple of these other issues that we wanted. I just wanted to for you to talk a little bit about urea is a very important commodity that comes out of, I guess, out of Russia, maybe out of the Ukraine.
Yes.
And we're, of course, because of the sanctions, we're not buying urea, and it's causing a lot of trouble.
Well, interestingly enough, that's what I was talking about. That's part of the digital exhaust fluid, or AdBlue, and
uh-huh.
the United States doesn't produce enough. Now, both the United States and Australia have a critical shortage. Let's call it DEF, or AdBlue, because mm-hmm. it's easier to remember than urea is.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can't get AdBlue and you've got a diesel truck, when your AdBlue tank runs dry, the truck stops. You are not allowed to drive. But there are things going on right now, and I certainly want to get into the drought
mm-hmm.
in the West. There are things going on right now, like the baby formula, like the women's products, like AdBlue, like diesel fuel, like diesel oil, that no reasonably led civilization could possibly have a shortage of. What the United States has done, and certainly what Europe has done, is come to depend on natural resources from Russia and finished goods from China. Now, you've got two choices. You either produce your own goods and your own natural resources, or you get along with the people who produce them. I am absolutely astounded at the stupidity of NATO and the stupidity of the leaders, and I use great big quotation marks around that, of the EU in acting like lapdogs for the United States government. Now, in response to Russia shutting off natural gas, okay, because they're not getting paid for it, the United States is saying, well, we'll ship liquid natural gas to Europe. Well, that's going to take 5 years to do, and the cost is going to be three or four times what it was before. The United States has condemned the European Union to starvation and freezing coming this winter. For what? For a war in Ukraine? The primary demand from Putin was simple. I want secure borders. Mm-hmm. Now, when you're living in a country where the president doesn't give a shit about secure borders, you might think, well, who cares about secure borders? But rational people do consider secure borders, and he did not want a nuclear-armed enemy on its doorstep, and that's perfectly reasonable. The EU is doing things that are absolutely suicidal. It's causing inflation and hyperinflation, and it's going to cause starvation and freezing come wintertime. And there's absolutely no purpose to it. The EU and the United States are doing it to themselves. It's not Russia doing it. It's self-inflicted.
Well, there's no doubt about it. And as you point out, the military-industrial complex and a lot of businesses that feed off of that are maybe coming out ahead. And I just think, Bob, it's hard to get that stopped. You have all these CEOs of corporations that are saying, well, I've got to have more earnings next quarter. I can't have less. And how do we do this? Well, we have to have a war somewhere so we can keep sending billions of dollars of aid to the Ukrainians so they can fight off the Russians. It seems insane. It is insane. Bob, I want to ask you about this desert or this extreme lack of water that we're having now in the West and the Southwest of the U.S. It's a big deal, but we're hardly hearing anything about it. Could you comment about that?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. It's actually a lot bigger deal than even you're implying. This is the biggest drought in the Southwest in 1,200 years. It has gone on for 20 years, and nobody in power is pointing it out. Now, what's happened in the West is most of the water in the West ends up coming down the Colorado River and feeds into Lake Mead and Lake Powell. And we get the water for Southern California and Arizona and Nevada and even as far east as Kansas from the Colorado River. 100 years ago, all of the governments sat down together and said, okay, we need to divvy up the water. We'll take 100% of the water from the Colorado River, and you get this much, and you get this much, and you get this much, and you get this much. Now, the problem is we had gone through a very long, very wet period. So the amount of water that they were giving away to various organizations, cities, and states is actually more water than existed. And you can get away with that for a long, long time. But we've now come to the point where we've got this mega drought. Crop yields are down due to lack of water and because of lack of fertilizer due to the cost of the incredible stupidity of Biden trying to destroy the fossil fuel industry. We got a real problem. Now, there are 40 million Americans who depend on water from Lake Mead and Lake Powell, and those lakes are going to dry up very soon. Now, I don't know if very soon is 6 months from now or whether it's 2 years from now. It is a critical issue, and something has to be done. And quite bluntly, you cannot solve any problem unless you can identify the problem. And Biden wants to talk about abortion.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Well, Bob, I was just noticing a report on Lake Mead. I don't know if it was Zero Hedge or where it was, but the water level has dropped like something like 1,000 feet. And if it drops another 140 feet or so, it will be below the level in which it will feed the the power station. The big one, I forget the name, the big one that's right there, that so many people depend on power from, that.
Lake Eden, Lake Powell.
Right. So it's just, it is really, and you're not hearing a thing about it, not a thing. So people aren't prepared, and so it's.
Well, if they reduce enough of the population, you don't kill off 40 million people. You only have to kill off 5 or 10 million.
Yeah.
It is a crisis. It's out of control now. It's one of those things that actually there are no good solutions to.
Mm-hmm.
You could reduce water usage, and they absolutely have to do that. They cannot keep draining the Colorado River, and that's what they've been doing for 100 years.
Yeah.
When they do that, you're not going to get vegetables from Arizona or Kansas or Colorado.
California, yeah.
California, Oregon, yeah. Washington. So there are things that have to be done. There are hard choices that have to be made. And we're not even discussing this.
No.
And quite bluntly, the United States is a country committing suicide, and it's entirely self-inflicted.
All right, let's talk a little bit about, what we're talking about here are supply chain issues. We're talking about a reduction of supply of key commodities and products, as you've been discussing. And it's really, and at the same time, the politicians, of course, and the bankers are creating money out of nothing. So the demand is there, but the supply is shrinking. And so we have this inflationary problem that's really getting very, very serious. And from all the things you're talking about, it could get a lot worse, probably will get a lot worse unless something is done. So let's talk about the investment implications of all of this. I think you said a little while ago that you are very concerned about the potential for hyperinflation. You want to talk about that a little more?
Yes, and that's one of those things that you really have to define hyperinflation. Now, somebody came to me a year or two ago and talked to me about a book that was written in Germany exactly 100 years ago. And he said, this is the best book ever written about money. And he wanted to take the book from German and put it into English. And he needed my help to do that. And the name of the book is called The Money Revelation. And it was written from 1920 to 1922. In Germany, and of course, that was the peak of the hyperinflation. Now, people confuse hyperinflation with inflation.
Mm-hmm.
Inflation is when prices go up 8 or 10% a year, and we're there right now.
Right.
And it's the worst inflation, probably, if it was measured accurately, in history. Hyperinflation, on the other hand, is when people lose faith in the value of the currency and they rush to spend it as fast as they can. And I believe that's going to happen if the government of the United States and the Western states allow the drought to drain Lake Mead and Lake Powell. We're going to have a crisis like the United States has never faced before. It will destroy the country and the currency. But the Ukraine war and World War III certainly has the potential of doing exactly the same thing. The Money Revelation, and I highly encourage people to go to Amazon and get it and read it, talks not about what money should be. It talks about what money does. Mm-hmm. What is the function of money? And strangely enough, I've never seen anybody discuss that. I've never read anything about, what should money do? Okay, people talk about what money should be, but they don't talk about what it should do.
Uh-huh.
I found it a very valuable book. In my opinion, there are such serious problems right now. Ukraine is a week away from becoming so serious that, it would start World War III and it would create a nuclear chain. There is a portion of Russia that can only be accessed through Lithuania. And Lithuania said, mm-hmm. we're not going to allow, because of the sanctions, we're not going to allow goods through. Now, Lithuania is one of those shithole little countries that exists in Eastern Europe. That's a great place to go spend a week or two in either the spring or the fall, and they've got some beautiful stuff. But it's a shithole. Chicago has a bigger police department. Lithuania has an army. And what they're counting on is NATO to defend them. And here's the problem. And again, this, people are not asking the right question. The war in Ukraine is not between Russia and Ukraine.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
The war in Ukraine is between Russia and NATO.
Right, for sure.
NATO is supplying weapons. Mm-hmm. NATO is supplying people. NATO is supplying money. And guess what? NATO is losing. So the idiots running Lithuania are about to say, okay, we've got this guy that walked into a bar and started a fight, and he gets his ass kicked every time he opens his mouth. And him and me, we're going to take on Putin. guys, you may want to think about that. Yeah. Okay. The United States just got their ass kicked in Afghanistan after 20 years and spending $2.3 trillion. Do you really want that to be your protector? Are you kidding? We don't know how to fight a war. All we know how to do is to send money to the military industrial complex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So we have these dire situations that you're just talking about. Very, very problematic, obviously, to say the least. And what is this going to mean then? I mean, the practical applications for each person. What should we be doing? And we, first of all, being aware, and that's why I'm so happy that you're waking people up with this message. But as responsible human beings, what should we be doing now, Bob?
That varies on where you are in your economic status and how old you are and a lot of things. There is no simple answer to that. Quite bluntly, if you live in the Southwest, and that's everywhere from Kansas west mm-hmm. and south, you need to be aware that there could be a crisis coming up for both power and water.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what do you do about that? Now, quite bluntly, and it's very funny, I am apprehensive about the availability of food in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So I literally have stocked up, and I've got 6 months' food stocked up here, and I actually have chickens. Okay, so I'm not doing very well with my chickens. I've had three chickens eaten by dogs in the neighborhood. So I'm changing my name, and in the future, I'm going to be called Colonel Sanders, because I'm actually supplying more chicken than the local KFC.
All right. Well, obviously, you know, in terms of purchasing power, to the extent there's still a world left we can trade in, obviously gold and silver and tangible and commodities, things that you need, as you say, food, those are things we can do to an extent. I just wanted to ask you a little bit. We talked earlier today about, we talked to Michael Spreadbarrel of Novo Resources. Novo is a company that you know very well. And Michael seems that I know they've had their difficulties, and a lot of people are blaming Novo for those problems. I think Michael offers some good reason for optimism, you know, having to do with the higher grade fresh rock. They've got a lot of great targets that they're looking at exploring and developing. And their mechanical sorting is phase two of that is going along very well. They're getting, you know, getting rid of 99% of the rock for all the gold that's contained within that mass of rock. I think there's a lot of things to be optimistic about, but the share price has really hit the skids, to say the least. What's your take on Novo right now, Bob?
Actually, that's very good, because certainly one of the people who's taken a lot of blame for no vote, and I hear about this on a daily basis, is me. And I've got people saying, well, gee, you used to comment a lot, and now you don't say anything. Well, there's a lot of things that I couldn't say. Mm-hmm. And I listened to your interview with Mike Spreadborough, and I actually like the guy a lot. Mm-hmm. And anybody who's writing off no votes making an absolute mistake, and I feel sorry for them. Let's talk about the grade and the production and the fresh rock.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. They use a term that I've never seen used anywhere else. When they're talking about fresh rock, they're actually talking about hard rock.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So they're the material that they've been producing for the last year is the unconsolidated oxide material.
Right.
There's a lot of free gold in it. When they tested it, and they had a very expensive and extensive testing program, they came up with 2.3 to 2.5 grams. That would have allowed production of probably 100 to 120,000 ounces a year. Now, here's where it gets interesting. The fresh rock and the unconsolidated oxide rock are exactly the same material.
Mm-hmm.
The only difference is some of it's hard rock and it's in chunks, and some of it's unconsolidated and it's loosely packed. When they were mining the oxide material, they would blast it, and they would take loaders, and they would dump it in dump trucks, and they would take it to the mill and process it. They had tested it at something like 2.3 to 2.7 grams
mm-hmm.
a ton. And the production was only 1.3 to 1.4.
Mm-hmm.
Two things happen. One is the labor market in Australia is the tightest and worst in the world. You can pick up the phone and get a job at a higher salary. If you know anything, a geologist with a year, 2 years experience, which means a geologist who has no clue, can make $170,000 a year. Okay, a truck driver can make $200,000 a year. It is an extremely expensive, difficult labor market.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happened was the guy who was in charge of grade control left and went somewhere else. And it doesn't make any difference what the reason was. I'm not saying he was a bad person or made a mistake. But the guy who had been doing rather a good job for grade control left. They actually hired five different junior geologists to bring them in and to try to bring them up to speed so they would get the grade of the material up, and not a single one of the five actually worked out. Now, somewhere between the blasting, the loading into the trucks, the driving to the mill, there was a gram of gold per ton just disappearing. Now, it wasn't stolen. It was either left in the last half inch, the bottom half inch of the pit, or it fell out of the truck, or it disappeared, and it's sitting in the mill at the very bottom of the pile. So the solution, and they knew the solution is to produce the fresh rock, because fresh rock, the gold doesn't drop out of
it. Uh-huh, right.
I think the grade of fresh rock is 2.8 grams, mm-hmm. which would take them up to that 100 to 120,000 ounces a year.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is the labor market in Australia is so bad, they should have actually put in the permit for the fresh rock a year ago, a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
They never anticipated how difficult it would be.
Mm-hmm.
They actually put the request in for the permit in March, hoping that it would be a six-week, two-month adventure. When they called 6 weeks or 2 months later, the people at the government agency said, oh, the guy that's in charge of that quit, and we're going to hire somebody.
They hadn't even started the process, probably.
Exactly. And then they hired somebody, and they came back and said, okay, another couple months, we'll get back to you. And then he quit. And then the first guy came back. So I really admired Novo because they bit the bullet, and for the first time in 20 years, they told Novo investors, by the way, we're screwed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're at the mercy of the people who do the permitting. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that's true. Now, the gold is there. Mike Spreadrow's got a great, is a great leader. He's got good people. They've got a $200 million mill. They've got the gold. I mean, I wrote a book, and unfortunately, nobody's reading the book now because Novo's turned into such a disaster. But it's not because of Novo. I would love to say, well, this guy screwed up, or this guy screwed up, or this guy screwed up, and it's just not so. The gold is there. And actually, the what Mike alluded to, DeGray has that Hemi project.
Yes.
And I think he said 8 or 10 million ounces. I own DeGray at 5 cents a share for a couple of years, and then it shot up to $1.20. Okay. DeGray was up, let's see, that's 20, 30, 40 fold.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's not 40 fold. It's up 20 fold.
Yeah.
Okay. In about 6 months. And Novo has the ground right next to them, and they're on the same formation. So anybody writing Novo off, I think, is making a real serious mistake. I own Novo. I'm quite happy to own Novo. I'm certainly looking at buying more, and I think it's a good opportunity. And I'm sorry that these issues have come up. But they do come up. This is my business. Nobody said it was going to be easy.
No, that's true. It's a very tough business, Bob. And I think, you know, I mean, this is – every company has their own story. Every project is different. And we can spend a lot of time understanding. Sometimes companies are doing extremely well, and the share prices still get knocked down in markets like this. So in sort of winding up here, I'd like to ask you to talk a little bit about sentiment. You have some ideas about – sentiment and how investors can really learn a lot with regard to sentiment to know where the markets are going and where they're headed next, I guess.
That's very good. And again, I will point to my two books, Basic Investing in Resource Stocks and Nobody Knows Anything, as being must read books. If you're going to be an investor and you can't spend $10 on each of those books, you're not an investor. You're a crap shooter. You need to go buy Bitcoin. But sentiment is very important. And again, it's an issue of asking the right question. Now, I'm going to trick you again, okay? Jay, at bullish markets, what is volume in typical stocks and resources? What happens to volume?
Well, they really go up a lot. You can see a lot of volume when you're, you know, everybody's making money, everybody's jumping in, and they, you know, not many people want to sell because they're looking for that higher numbers. And
okay, in a bear market, when it's been a disaster and lots of stocks are down 60, 80, 90%, what happens to volume?
Listen, I have a number of those companies that I think are very good. I think they got great projects. But I can't sell them now. There's no volume. Nobody wants to pay anything for them because they think, you know, the market's going to go down lower. They're not looking at the intrinsic value or the fundamentals of the story. They're just simply piling on with the rest of the market or bailing out.
Okay, that's very good. And the strange thing is, and those were not trick questions. Those are questions that any investor could ask themselves. But to the best of my knowledge, none of the gurus, none of the experts actually talk about that. Knowing whether you're in a bear market or a bull market is as simple as looking at the trading volume it's seeing, and actually it occurred to me, I need to talk to one of the guys who's capable of doing it. Somebody needs to be tracking it, because you could come up with some kind of chart showing mm-hmm. trading volume, mm-hmm. and that would be exceptionally valuable information. And I don't think anybody has that. I'd like to see somebody do it, and I'm way too lazy to do it myself. But right now, there's very low liquidity. There's no trading volume whatsoever. You get stocks down 10 or 15% in a day because somebody's gotten a margin call and it's being forced out of their position. That is opportunity knocking at the door. And all you have to do is go to the door and say, come right in, Mr. Opportunity. We're going to have a party. We are going to have an exceptional opportunity shortly to buy stocks very cheap. Now, there's something, you remember the chart that I just sent you a couple days ago? Okay, it's called the Gold Miners Bullish Percent Index. Symbol is $ Bravo Papa Golf Delta Mike. And it's something that I track, and it shows you the bullish the bullish percent index, stocks going up or stocks going down. And if you look at that, you can compare it to highs and lows in the past. Mm-hmm. And it hasn't gotten down as low as it did in March of 2020. But it's the lowest it's been pretty much, except for one time, since then. So it's not an absolute bottom yet, but it's close.
It's very close. Well, it's good to, then if those people that are looking ahead have managed to preserve some cash and some purchasing power, then it's, as you say, it's an optimistic or it's an opportunity to pick up things. You know, you look at the successful investors, I think of Rick Rule, for example, always a guy that was early to sell and always had some dry power to pick up things when no one else wanted them. And obviously that's the key, but having the emotional or the fortitude to act, you know, let your brain work instead of your heart or your emotions. I guess that's what you have to do. All right, Bob, anything else? We've gone way over here, but it's always good to have you. There's so many insights I think are very valuable, and I want to thank you so much for spending the time with us.
Okay, well, there is one thing that I definitely should mention.
Okay.
I wrote an article here recently talking about leverage, okay?
Yes.
And when I use the term leverage, I'm talking about margins. Do not do any investing on margin, period.
Mm-hmm.
If you do, you are going to get creamed. It's true of stocks. It's true of bonds. It's true of resources. It's true of commodities. We are in an exceptionally dangerous market.
Mm-hmm.
You can look what's happened to the cryptocurrencies,
mm-hmm.
where they hit a high of $3 trillion a couple of years ago, and
mm-hmm.
now down to $900 million.
All right, Bob, can people pick that up at 321 Gold, that article?
Yeah, if they go to 321 Gold and they look at the archives, or they look at the archives under my name, I can't get to it immediately.
Okay.
But I was talking about leverage. But in simple terms, in a market that's dangerous, you do not want a leverage position, which
right.
means do not buy anything on credit.
Yep, I would say that applies to short-term ETFs as well as anything as well. You know, it might be
across the board.
Right.
One thing to remember: in a depression, every single asset class gets creamed.
As Richard Russell used to say, the winners in a bear market are those that lose the least. So
that's,
I think,
absolutely. Correct.
All right. We'll have to leave it go at that, Bob. Thank you so much for your time. It's very generous of you to share your thoughts and so much time with us, and I really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Super deal. Anytime, Jay. It's a pleasure, and you ask great questions.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Well, folks, thanks again for listening. Next week, my guest will be Alistair MacLeod, who will talk about why Russia is winning the financial war, and also Michael Wood of Reyna Gold, and Michael Oliver of Momentum Structural Analysis will join me as well. Until next week, goodbye, and God's bless. blessings to you.